was today, oh boy.
Ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ 89.5, Ashland, Oregon. Art and entertainment news and views. For our inaugural show, we talked to Nicholas Stanton about his new book, In the Gumshoe Diaries. Dave Harvey tells us about the talent poetry readings and a special preview from one of Blackstone Audio Inc.'s hottest titles this summer, all coming up right after this news. Hello, and thank you for joining us for a show filled with the information you want to know. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Lucia Sherman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Troubled UK pop star Amy Winehouse was found dead in her London home, according to multiple British Wire reports. Britain's Sky News reported that paramedics were called to her home at just after 4 p.m., but the 27-year-old was pronounced dead at the scene. Winehouse publicists in the U.S. and Great Britain have not yet responded to requests for comment. No reason has been yet cited as a cause of death. Winehouse had recently canceled her summer European tour dates after a disastrous performance in the Serbian capital of Belgrade, in which the singer was heavily booed after arriving late and then staggering through the performance. Such erratic behavior has been the norm for Winehouse since her effort Back to Black catapulted her to stardom. A new album was long rumored but never materialized, and much of Winehouse's post-Back to Black career was mired in sudden stops and starts and troubles with abuse and the law. She was due to be the headliner at the 2009 Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival, but was forced to cancel after being charged with assault for allegedly attacking a fan a week before the festival. Winehouse has recorded a song for Tony Bennett's Duets 2, which is scheduled for release in September.
Deep cleansing breath. CBS Entertainment President Nina Tassler said at CBS's presentation, after a very carefully edited clip from Two and a Half Men that featured no trace of former star Charlie Sheen. "It has been a hectic few months for us," she said. "Just last week, thanks to our new cast member's tweet, we found out that the square root of 6.25 is..." She said, referring to Ashton Kutcher's tweet shortly after news of his deal for Men leaked, "We could not be happier to have an actor, producer, and social media mogul, Ashton Kutcher, joining TV's number one comedy for the past 5 years. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time together, the new cast of Two and a Half Men, Kutcher, joined by co-stars John Cryer and August T. Jones, walked on stage, all grooving to the theme song of the show. Kutcher looked genuinely happy and came across as likable as he gave unscripted remarks. 'It's awesome. It's unbelievable to be here,' he said. 'I got the best job in show business, and I'm ecstatic.'" Cryer addressed the height discrepancy in the new cast, with Kutcher towering over him and Jones. "I asked CBS's bosses, 'Did you have to get a tall guy?' and went on to suggest a new title for the show, 1 and 2 and a Half Men.
Why did Borders fail, and what did its shuttering mean for Barnes & Noble, book publishers, and others? In a letter to Borders' nearly 11,000 employees, all of whom will lose their jobs, Borders Group CEO Mike Edwards palmed off Borders' closing on external forces. True, Borders faced a lot of competition from Amazon and other online booksellers, but the nation's second largest bookstore chain was also slow to adapt to the digital age and made poor decisions. In 2001, Borders decided to pay Amazon to run its website rather than handling that itself. And as a former Borders employee told Bloomberg this week, it's ended up being a customer harvesting vehicle for Amazon. Borders broke off the partnership with Amazon in 2008 and began running its own website, but it lost years of managing its own digital strategy. Meanwhile, Barnes & Noble was quicker to adapt and, of course, launched the Nook, which now has over 25% market share for e-readers. Other factors that led to Borders demise, its emphasis on CD and DVD sales, not a great strategy in the iTunes era, and rapid expansion of stores, even as sales declined, at a cost of a beefed-up online strategy. This was great news for Barnes & Noble, right? Well, kind of. Barnes & Noble is losing a competitor, and it will gain customers who used to shop at Borders. But Barnes & Noble faces a lot of the same challenges that Borders did, namely competition from Amazon. Barnes & Noble temporarily will also lose some customers to Borders' massive upcoming round of liquidation sales. What does this mean for publishers and authors? It's unequivocally bad news for publishers and authors. And the bottom line is, the closure of Borders means fewer places to sell books and promote books and book discovery.
The Google eBook Store has seen a lot of attention from Google over the last few months, with an expansion to the affiliate network, updated APIs, new partnerships with major libraries, improved device compatibility, and more. Now Google is taking another step forward with a Story HD from iRiver. This e-reader is the first to be integrated with the Open Google eBook platform. What that means, in brief, is that the Story HD will be compatible with wireless connection to the Google eBook Store from the moment you pull it out of the box. That's a step up from the 80 or so devices which could potentially store and read Google eBooks, but only if you downloaded them from your computer system and then transferred them to the reader. The wireless access to the bookstore gives users access to hundreds of thousands of Google eBooks for sale and more than 3 million for free, according to the Google blog post announcing the release of the Story HD. The success of the Story HD does bear some weight for Google. If it succeeds, it will set the precedent of integrating the Google eBooks APIs for immediate access to the Google eBook Store, thus increasing the use of this service, the total purchases, and in the end, the amount of revenue Google generates from their bookstore. The device is described as slim and lightweight with a high-resolution e-ink screen and a keyboard for easy searching, and will cost $139.99.
After seven previous films over a 10-year span, $2 billion in domestic box office, and still more treasures overseas, Warner Brothers has unwrapped the Harry Potter advertising line it hoped it would never have to use. It all ends. Google announced Thursday that they have teamed up with J.K. Rowling's Pottermore to offer the author's internationally famous Harry Potter books using the Google Book eBook platform. Google's deal includes all seven Harry Potter novels, which will make their digital debut in the fall. Using Google's technology will allow users to port their purchases to their choice from more than 80 e-readers. And as part of the deal, Google has exclusive payment rights for all Pottermore.com purchases, meaning all products will be purchased solely through Google Checkout rather than Amazon or PayPal. What Google doesn't get, however, is the right to sell the ebooks, which will be available exclusively at Pottermore.com. And that's your art and entertainment news for July 2011. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature. Nicholas Stanton has written many books in the past that deal with family. He is now expanding his range into the mystery genre and sat down with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc. for this interview.
Welcome to our podcast here. Get behind me now, stay there. Today we're interviewing author Nicholas Sheridan Stanton. He's the author of The Gumshoe's Diaries. Great new book just come out. And we want to welcome you, Nick. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great. And you coming here from Los Angeles. And Los Angeles is pretty much where The Gumshoe Diaries is centered. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's where the character, he operates from.
Downtown LA?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit. Tell everybody about it, you know?
The Gumshoe Diaries is my version of an L.A. Noir type of story, you know, detective. The lead character's name is Whitey Rude. And he's sort of, you know, different in that he's sort of lost in the 40s, a fan of the 40s, but he lives in present day. So he's always a little out of phase with everybody else. And he lives in a rundown old hotel called the Alexandria, which is a real hotel.
Oh, okay. And where'd you get the idea from?
Oh, I was a big fan of all that Humphrey Bogart and Ray Milland type movies. Huge Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett fan. You know, the Maltese Falcon and the Big Sleep, etc. And my granddad was the deputy sheriff and used to tell me stories of that era. And he happened to live in that in the downtown area, so I loosely named the character after him.
Actually, I saw the trailer, and I got to tell you, that it was great. Now, you play Whitey in the trailer.
I do.
How was that?
That was a lot of fun. You know, shopped around for a trench coat. Never did find the fedora, but we did put everything together. Took a bunch of thousands of pictures and put the trailer together in the downtown LA area.
Oh, okay. And do you have fun shooting it? Or, I mean, was there a lot of people involved?
Oh, absolutely. I had my crew was there, my partner, Jay, and we shot downstairs. We have a small production company put together after my first book came out called Pugnacious Productions. And we spent, a good 3 to 4 weeks assembling all this, stills and cutaway films, and then shot the picture of Whitey going through his, arriving at his apartment and having his little narration over the top of the story.
And I noticed he was drinking some whiskey there. What kind of whiskey was that?
Whitey's a Jameson fan, yeah.
Why Jameson?
That's right. Well, because he's Irish, for one thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, granddad was a 6'4", two-fisted Irish drinker. So,
in the book, you tell us a little bit about Whitey Rude. He's the detective. He's the main character. What does it involve? Because everywhere I look and all the advertisements I see, it's all about Sally November.
Oh, yeah, Sally November. See, the way that the book starts out, first of all, The Gumshoe Diaries is a series of books I'm going to write, and the first story is Fortune Cookies Always Lie. So the lead character is this Asian girl who calls herself Sally November. She's a call girl, and she's murdered in the first chapter. And basically, she's the niece of Whitey's occasionally accurate snitches, a gay Asian couple named Jay Lai and Lou Wrong. So they own a Jewish delicatessen called Show 'Em You Like 'Em downtown.
Oh, that's great. And, I've actually read the book. And what I really liked about the book was that, I won't give it away. There's no spoiler alert here. But I liked the dialogue. The dialogue was really snappy and it moved along at a nice brisk pace, as they say. And I was wondering, did you have to, do any research on that? Because it was very authentic type of 40s, 50s type feel. Or is that just something that you picked up on growing up?
Oh, we started out at a young age as smartasses and 50 years to hone the craft, so me and my brothers are pretty good about that. And my father's the king of them.
Well, thanks for great reading. And, so this is not your first book. You have other books, The Migrant, KK Undercover, The Cookie Caper, Haunted Field Trip, which is a sequel to KK Undercover. And I believe you're working on one right now called Gabriel's Promise. All these other books are either children's books or family-oriented books, more towards a spiritual side. Why the departure to the detective story?
I was just feeling a little wild side. I mean, I was always been, a big fan of the L.A. Noir type of a genre. And it just seemed like the time to write one. I wanted to do something with my granddad, Lucy, based it on his life. And as a former deputy sheriff, it seemed like a good time to put something like that together. And I wanted something light, get away from the heavy messages in the earlier books. And while they're all good stories, but they're more epic, I wanted something smaller, a faster read that would, encourage people to stick with it and to have fun with it. I had fun writing it.
You've been around the world, and we've talked before, and if you were to say to Whitey, here's a good vacation spot, here's where you need to go and chill out from your last crime-solving caper, where would you recommend him?
Well, right after Ashland, Oregon. I'd probably send him to Shannonbridge, Ireland, about 40 clicks from Tullamore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's to Ireland, huh? Will he be solving any crimes while he's there?
No, but he'd be doing a lot of Jameson.
I'll do a lot of Jameson. Is that your drink as well?
Absolutely.
I want to thank you for your time and coming down here and spending some time with us here. I know it's not down the road.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we look forward to future books coming out. And I want to tell everybody that The Gumshoe's Diaries will be coming out in hardcover and paperback in September. Right now, it's available as an ebook through justimagineitinc.com. It's also available on iTunes Library, Amazon, the Sony Reader, the Nook, so pretty much everywhere. And people can pick up a copy of that. Good read in there.
Get a chuckle.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and we look forward to your next project.
I challenge you to figure out the ending.
Well, I've read the book, but we'll challenge everybody else out there. And I do highly recommend it. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thanks very much.
To learn more about Nicholas Stanton, visit his blog at authorhood.blogspot.com.
The Wolf.
She lingers so far away. With her my mind does stray. Thoughts of her near at hand make me feel joyfully grand. Wanting to please my girl makes my body tingle with thrill. Playing with her hair all the while, time goes by like a freeway mile. Oh, do I miss my princess? She makes everything else feel like excess.
Sometimes it seems that everyone in Southern Oregon is an artisan of some type. One popular way of expression is a poem. Dave Harvey talked with the president of Just Imagine Inc. about the poetry readings he hosts and talent on the second Thursday of the month.
We're here today with poet Dave Harvey. Yeah, he's an accomplished poet and a retired English teacher for the last 40 years in the Northern California area. Also was a naval officer. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing fine, Charlie. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You know, we're talking about the downtown coffee house and talent. They have poetry readings there. I believe it's on Thursday nights. Is that correct?
Second Thursday of every month.
Oh, great. Oh, how did the readings come about?
Well, it was opened in 2003, the coffee house. Uh-huh. You take one look at it, you can tell it was a gas station once. At any rate, a woman named Deborah Thornley got in touch with the owner, Mindy Stark, about having a monthly poetry reading in the style of the old beatnik poetry readings around the Bay Area in the 50s and 60s, and I guess still go on. And that got started in January of 2004, and it's been going ever since. My wife and I moved here in the summer of 2006, just as the owners were selling out. And I saw the announcement of the monthly poetry reading, but we're closing. But Dan and Sarah Goyette bought it. And Dan particularly has a vision of talent being a place that people come and gather. And he wants his coffee house to be one of the spots. And so he immediately talked with Deborah and got the monthly readings going again. And I was present for the first one in September 06. And at the end of that year, we didn't used to have readings during the summers, and Sarah was moving. So she asked me to take over as the coordinator, and I've been the default master of ceremonies most of the meetings ever since.
Nice.
We did talk Dan into going to 12 months a year, so we now have 12 months a year. There's also a contest that begins each April and runs till the following March. People submit poems only if they have first been read at the downtown. And then in March, we pass them all to our judge, and the prize winners are announced in April each year.
Well, the contest, now anybody can enter the contest, correct?
Anybody who has read the poem in the downtown coffee house. We keep a little box of entries right there, and you can read it and put it right in.
Well, and how do you guys work that on Thursdays? Is it like an open mic thing, or you can just come in, or do you have to tell people ahead of time, you know, contact you and submit the poem, and you select who's going to read, or how does
no.
that work?
It's open signups. It's always been called an open mic, which mystifies me because we don't have any sound equipment. It's just a really nice room for a reading. We do have to encourage some of the softer-voiced people to speak up. We just have a sign-up sheet. You walk in, you sign up. I see your name on the list, and your number 7, say, for example, and I call your name, and you stand up and read.
You might want to give us the times, too, so people know when it is.
Oh, yes, thank you. Sign-ups begin 6:30, and the readings begin at 7. A lot of times, Sarah and Dan are there and can sell hot drinks if you want those. They can't always make it, but they open up their little coffee bar when they are there. How many people? We've had as few as 5 or 6 just sitting in an informal circle. We've had 40 or 50 people in that room and 20 and 30 readers on a given evening. It really varies widely. I'd say about a dozen readers is pretty typical.
Well, you know, it sounds like it's a lot of fun. Speaking of poets, I understand you're a poet as well.
Yes.
Have you have any samples that you brought with you? Any poems you'd like to share with us? Today?
Yes, I have. I probably brought too many because I didn't.
Never too many, Dave. Yeah. Do you need a setup on this, or are they self-explanatory?
I think they're self-explanatory. I'll read you one, and we can go from there.
Okay.
One's called Ode on My Name. Got my first Bible and read about King David and was proud that his name was mine. Still, in school, I didn't like being called David as much as Dave. In 6th grade, I signed a paper, Dave, and after that, people mostly called me David when I'd messed up, and Dave when I hadn't. David still seems like a little kid, grimed with oily playground dirt, shirt tail out, shoe untied, nose drippy, and screwing up everything he does. But Dave is tall, lean, tan, drives an old pick-em-up truck, and forever squints keen-eyed at some far blue horizon, if only in his heart.
I like that. That was very nice.
Thank you.
We shall call you Dave.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So when you were teaching your students, was your focus on poetry or literature, a little of both, or was that a balance?
There was a balance. One of the things I indulged myself in was every Friday, if they had worked well, the last 5 minutes of each class, I'd sing to them.
Oh, okay.
And some of them would be songs I had written. Mostly they were comical little songs that I'd learned along the way. And I always tell them, you work well, I'll sing to you, and you can decide whether you've been rewarded or punished.
Oh, okay.
But they seemed to like them.
And what would you sing?
Well, one of the standards the last 20 years down in Eureka at Winship Junior High, I would always tell them, you've got to learn Arlo Guthrie's song, I Don't Want a Pickle, I Just Want to Ride on My Motorcycle. You're probably familiar.
I'm familiar with it, yes.
Well, I imprinted that, I guess, so well that the year I retired, the student body president stopped the ceremony long enough to pay a tribute to me for retiring, and then got the entire crowd to sing that stupid song. It was one of the great moments of my life.
Arlo Guthrie, you want to give us a few bars?
I don't want a pickle, I just want to ride on my motorcycle. I don't want a tickle, I just want to ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to die, I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Cole.
Oh, very good. That was Dave Harvey doing Arlo Guthrie. And I want to thank you so very much. And we look forward to not only seeing you, but hearing from you. And we will be posting up the schedules for everyone on justimagineinink.com. And thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you, Charlie. This has been a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you, sir.
To learn more about Dave Harvey and a Downtowners open mic, go to justimagineinink.com or call 541-535-2299.
The Cherokee.
Up all night lying in the porch light, talking of everything and the world of the rain and the tire swirl. Lying there nestled in arms against the cold, kissing, feeling the mood make me bold. I tripped on your face. Staring in your eyes, you told me only the truth, never a lie. It seemed it was destiny that we met, making me whole. We're a book not yet read. Living in the moment at all times, living for each other through good and bad times.
Blackstone Audio, Inc. releases amazing titles every month, and today we feature Pretty by New York Times national best-selling author Jillian Loren. B.B. Baker is an ex-everything, ex-stripper, ex-Christian, ex-drug addict, ex-pretty girl.
How I Got Here, the long version, is a longer story than I want to tell. How I Got Here, the short version, is the story of a night a year and a half ago. I was with Aaron, who was supposed to be the love of my life. "Did I win, baby?" I sang out to Aaron across Raji's bar, pretending I was more stupid than I actually was. We had landed in L.A. 6 months before, and that was when I really started laying on the dumb routine. I found it advantageous to be underestimated. You have to be careful how you fake it, though, because things like that can stick, and before you know it, you become what you're pretending to be. Not that I'm some kind of genius, but I'm not dull enough to think I lost even when the other guy sunk the eight ball. But I hollered at Aaron anyway because he was deep in red bar light, sparkle-eyed conversation with a smart, dainty blonde named Madison, for Christ's sake. Madison. Madison from USC Film School, no doubt. It was a bad night already. Bad even before it got worse.
Jillian Lauren is the author of the New York Times best-selling memoir, Some Girls. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband, Weezer bassist Scott Schreiner, and their son. Pretty is the real deal, a harrowing journey from darkness to light to real life. Antoine Wilson, author of The Interloper. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com.
Get Behind Me, Now Stay There is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Lucia Sherman. Please join us again next month for our interview with artist Amara Kopakova from Seattle, Washington, author of Viva la Revolution. Adios, amigos.
Hasta el día de hoy.